Now from the KSFR Newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Tuesday, September 24th.
The New Mexico Poison Center is warning that use of the drugs ecstasy and Molly, a purer form of ecstasy, are on the rise among teens and young adults both in New Mexico and across the country. Ecstasy and Molly are the common names for the man-made chemical called MDMA, which produce feelings of euphoria and a heightened sense of touch. The Poison Center's warning comes on the heels of the recent death of a 14-year-old Santa Fe girl who took multiple doses of the substance during a concert at the state fairgrounds last month. Combating Santa Fe's high school dropout rate is the focus of a meeting tomorrow with local and state agencies partnering with other groups and federal officials. Our city's ranking for dropouts is among the top three in the state, which itself also nears the top of the same list across the nation. The gathering is under the umbrella of Santa Fe's Children and Youth Commission. It takes place at Zona del Sol on Valentine Way tomorrow at 3. The candidates for mayor of Santa Fe are distancing themselves from political action committees or other groups that donate money to politicians, at least for now. The Journal North reports that the three city council members seeking the mayoral post, Patty Boucher, Bill Demas, and Rebecca Wurzberger, along with candidates Roman Abeta and Javier Gonzalez, are supporting Common Cause New Mexico's call to refuse funding from the organized political funders. A special Santa Fe City Council meeting takes place this evening to discuss three resolutions concerning the Santa Fe Municipal Charter Amendments. Those amendments could become ballot items for voter approval in a proposed special election that would be held in conjunction with our regular municipal election on March 14, 2014. Among changes put forth is making the mayoral post a full-time position with higher pay and barring the mayor's additional employment, water conservation, tax increases, and campaign contribution limits are also being looked at. The meeting is set for 5:30 at the Genevieve Chavez Community Center. Santa Fe County Commissioners today will consider a resolution establishing a veterans hiring initiative to increase veterans' employment opportunities with Santa Fe County. The commission will also take up appointments to the Water Policy Advisory Committee at its 1:30 meeting at the County Administration Building downtown. Campaign rhetoric is heating up as Albuquerque's October 8th municipal election draws near. The state Democratic Party is alleging that the Duke City's Republican city clerk, appointed by incumbent Mayor Richard Berry, is deliberately limiting some voter locations. The party says the lack of early voting sites south of downtown Albuquerque represents an effort to suppress that area's Democratic voting bloc. Early voting began back on September 18th. A heads up for folks driving on New Mexico 599, the Santa Fe relief route. The northbound lanes of the highway will be closed both today and tomorrow near Camino La Tierra between 8 p.m. and 4 a.m. both days. State police are requesting motorists use alternative routes. Foreclosure and late mortgage payment rates continue to decline in Santa Fe. That according to the National Real Estate Data Clearinghouse, CoreLogic. Their just-released report says foreclosures are down almost one full percentage point as measured from July of this year versus 2012. Mortgage delinquencies also dropped by a similar amount. Weather for Santa Fe, sunny and dry for the next few days. Highs in the mid-70s with overnight lows in the upper 40s. Friday and the weekend expected to be a bit cooler. I'm Tom Tropebridge, KSFR News.
And taking a look now at some national news. The sharp decline in illegal immigration to the U.S. during the long economic downturn has ended, researchers have estimated. The number of immigrants in the U.S. illegally edged up to 11.7 million in 2012 from 11.3 million in 2009. That's according to the Pew Research Center. The number of illegal immigrants had declined over several years from a high of 12.2 million back in 2007. The recent growth is largely driven by immigrants from outside of Mexico. A more precise measure from the U.S. Census Bureau is expected later this year. Oil giant BP has asked a U.S. court to halt payments from its settlement deal over the 2010 Gulf of Mexico oil spill, amid concerns about fraud control. The blast killed 11 workers and released an estimated 4 million barrels of oil into the Gulf, the worst offshore oil spill in U.S. history. It's the firm's latest move to stop or delay payments under a financial settlement program. It had expected payouts to total $7.8 billion, but says it's been driven up by excessive fees and bogus claims. The company has made two previous unsuccessful attempts to halt compensation payments. It says payments should be halted until the court-appointed claims administrator puts efficiency and accounting controls in place. The move has been recommended by former FBI Director Louis Free, who has reviewed the payments program. Boeing has revealed today that it has retrofitted retired fighter jets to turn them into drones. It said that a Lockheed Martin F-16 made a first flight with an empty cockpit last week. Two U.S. Air Force pilots controlled the plane from the ground as it flew from a Florida base to the Gulf of Mexico. Boeing suggested that the innovation could ultimately be used to help train pilots, providing an adversary they could practice firing on. The jet, which had previously sat mothballed at an Arizona site for 15 years, flew at an altitude of 40,000 feet and a speed of 1,100 miles per hour. Boeing said the unmanned F-16 was followed by two chase planes to ensure it stayed in sight and also contained equipment that would have allowed it to self-destruct if necessary. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue with our features segment in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
And Dan Garrity back with you now as At Noon segues to today's feature stories. Even though September's historic rains across New Mexico have now abated, storm damage assessments continue, revealing effects that would, even under the best of circumstances, be difficult to prepare for, let alone prevent. Such is the case at our nearby Los Alamos National Laboratory. Joining us now is LANL spokesperson Fred D'Souza. Fred, it's taken some time in the aftermath of the rains to fully uncover what damages occurred. What's the general assessment at this point?
And we know that we're not alone in suffering damage after the rains from that week. What happened at Los Alamos was something that occurred that did not appear in any of our recorded history. We received 7.5 inches of rain in the 4-day stretch at the end of that week, and then on the 13th, Friday the 13th, we received 1.5 inches of rain in 1 hour. And as I said, none of that has been recorded in our history, and it did quite a bit of damage, not to the mesa tops where our facilities are, but down in the canyons and the drainages is where most of the damage occurred.
And we've heard reports that some 75% of the lab's access roads have been damaged?
Right. We have access roads that go down to our environmental monitoring stations that are in the bottom of canyons and in the drainages. And to monitoring wells that we have in some places. And these are, you know, generally dirt roads. And when the water, you know, rushes down through those canyons, it carved out 6 or 8 foot deep trenches and gouges in these roads, and you can't get a truck through there now to get to our environmental monitoring stations, if those stations are even still in place anymore. So what our folks have been doing and are going to continue doing this week is walk down there or take ATVs to get down there to see exactly what has happened, how those canyon bottoms have changed, and you know, what needs to be done to get things back up and running.
We've also heard hundreds of stormwater sampling monitors have been taken out, representing millions in repair costs. Can you talk about that for us?
The damage to the stormwater samplers, and in some cases it's you know, just unplugging an intake. But in some other cases, it's completely, you know, replacing the units that have, you know, been torn from their concrete anchors and or chained to trees, and the chains broke, or, you know, steel poles bent that were anchoring them in the ground. This is, you know, the force of the water that moved through. So in some cases, it's just getting them back up and running. In other cases, it's replacing them. They're still doing an assessment. We have about 250 of these samplers across the property, and those samplers monitor what's running onto the lab property as well as what's running off. And they serve an important role, and some of those monitoring operations will be interrupted as we get things back up and running.
And of the repairs now needed for the lab, is this now a matter of receiving funds exclusively from the Department of Energy?
I think that's too early to say. I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I mean, it's the people who installed the samplers in the first place were lab subcontractors, and it's those same subcontractors in most cases that are going out to do the damage assessments. But I really don't know who, and I don't know if we've gotten to the point of determining who is going to do the work to replace them.
With the rains now likely behind us, is the current assessment revealing a complete picture of the situation, or might there be yet more damages uncovered?
We're going to continue going out and doing these damage assessments for the coming weeks, just to see, as I said, what has been damaged. In some cases, the floods have sort of rearranged the natural stream channels that happen in our canyon bottoms. So in some cases, that may mean moving a stormwater sampler from where it used to collect the stormwater to where the stream channel is now, so that it will be effective in collecting the stormwater samples when it starts to flow again in these newly eroded channels.
Anything else for our listeners to know at this time?
A couple of things. The lab in the last few years has put in some structures in our canyon bottoms that not only slow the speed of water going down canyon, but also reduce its force. Those structures are called grade control structures, and they also trap sediment or mud as it's moving down the stream and helps it settle out behind these structures. Those withstood the floods. They did what they were supposed to do, and we're glad for that. It's our belief that the damage would have been worse had those structures not been in place. And again, those have been installed over the past few years, and there's four of them on our property right now. The second thing I wanted to just say is that we have three stormwater monitoring stations that support the Buckman Direct Diversion Project, the Santa Fe Water Project. One of those monitoring stations is buried in mud right now, but two have been returned to service less than a week after the flood. So I think that shows the laboratories and the Department of Energy's commitment to supporting the Buckman Project and to providing them the information that they need to make sure they're satisfied with what's happening up here.
LANL spokesperson Fred D'Souza, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Support comes from Bookworks, an independent bookseller in Albuquerque for nearly 30 years. This fall, Bookworks hosts a number of writers, including Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation and The New Nuclear History, Command and Control, Terry McMillan, author of How Stella Got Her Groove Back and the new novel, Who Asked You, Andrew Solomon, author of Far From the Tree, and poet Nikki Giovanni. Info and tickets online at bkwrks.com or call 344-8139.
12:17 here in the KSFR newsroom as At Noon continues. New Mexico's land office has announced its approval of a large wind energy project in Torrance County that could generate enough energy to power up to 400,000 homes. This comes by way of a contract with Iberdrola Renewables of Portland, Oregon. Joining us now to discuss this pact is State Land Commissioner Ray Powell. Commissioner Powell, can you explain what this wind energy project would do for New Mexico and the land office's role in finalizing this contract?
We're using our state trust lands to work with companies in a private-public venture to earn more money for the school kids, universities, and hospitals while providing clean energy, reducing CO2 and water consumption, and earning a whole lot more money for our school kids. So we've gone out to bid for about 36,000 acres, and Iberdrola was a successful winner of that bid, and they're looking at producing over time about 1,000 megawatts in Torrance County. About 20% of that will be on state trust lands, and we think we'll earn about $50 million over the life of that project.
Is there anything that's new or different with how the state land office approached this renewable energy deal?
There are two things that are different than what has been done in the past. One, we get a base rent on our land, which is much higher than what we had been earning. But we also negotiated a percent of gross revenues on the sale of those electrons on the grid. So the better Iberdrola does, the better the school kids does. And that's what inflates that value.
State Land Office negotiated with Iberdrola, an Oregon firm, to establish this wind energy facility. Are there any New Mexico businesses that one day might be able to bid on a project of this scope?
You bet. And what we're trying to do is add value besides the land rentals. And an example is, earlier this summer, we celebrated the largest distributive solar array on state trust land with our tenant on trust land in our project at Sandia Science and Tech Park, EMCOR. They make the panels for orbiting satellites, the best in the world. They're now making panels, solar panels, for use on the land. So what we're trying to do is get New Mexico companies involved, both in terms of building wind, solar, geothermal, but also when a company comes to us and says, we'd like to lease your land, we want to say, well, that's great, but how about building your facility with products made in New Mexico and made on state trust land? So we really leverage and get added value, which keeps our taxpayers' bills down and really supports our schools.
Nationwide, there's been a dramatic increase in wind and other renewable energy generation facilities. What do you think is behind this change?
What I'm being told is that the economics of the new technologies are making it much more competitive because they're better and better technology. So I think a lot of it just has to do that the industry is maturing, and so they can produce more energy in a smaller space, and that's making them competitive.
The push for increased reliance on renewable sources of energy is widely perceived as a very positive one, but are there any drawbacks that you might share with us?
Oh, you know, the devil's always in the details, and what we're making sure is we work with our lessees to position these new technologies in the right place. So we're protecting our viewscapes, but we're also protecting migratory wildlife, because there's always a risk, and it was much greater earlier on, when thought was not given to where these were placed, and the older technologies of bird kills. So we're really paying attention to trying to get technologies placed on state trust land that set the standard to reduce risk to migratory wildlife, put them in the right places where they can generate the energy, but don't devastate our incredible vistas, our viewsheds. So there's always a trade-off, and we're committed to being transparent and accountable and work with the industry to try and set the highest standard we can.
And is there anything else that you'd like our listeners to know about the State Land Office's efforts for clean energy?
Well, I tell you, as we transition from, we were blessed with tremendous fossil fuels, and as we transition to renewable energies, we'll hit hiccups where we have to really go out, visit with communities, look at competing interests, and we're going to do that. We're going to be part of the solution. But the bottom line is New Mexico has an absolute abundance of sunshine, wind, and geothermal that puts us at the top of the list of every state. And there's no reason we can't figure out how to do this right and lead the country not only in the production of this renewable energy, but in the technologies that go to produce it, and the manufacturer. So it's that added value that we're championing at the land office. Let's lead the world in how you do this.
State Land Commissioner Ray Powell, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by PNM, who recently brought the Prosperity Energy Storage Project online. The project allows PNM to store solar energy, helping to provide consistent solar power even on cloudy days. This is the first solar storage plant integrated into the grid in the nation. If you have a question for PNM, you can talk to them on Twitter or Facebook, or visit PNM online at pnm.com.
12:23 here at KSFR. Water, and the lack of it, or too much of it, as in our recent bout of flooding, is a major topic in New Mexico. This week, the Audubon Society of New Mexico will host its fourth annual Women in Conservation Luncheon. This year's topic is water. Here to speak with us is Karen Stockdale, the Executive Director of Audubon New Mexico. Karen, tell us about this conference.
It's Friday. It's our fourth annual gathering where Audubon New Mexico is really celebrating our own roots and bringing people together in sharing conservation achievements across the Southwest. Audubon was actually started by women. Women were really instrumental in the beginnings in the late 1800s. There were society women in Boston and New York that really worked to stop birds from being slaughtered for the millinery, the hat trade. And in the process, they really helped kick off the conservation movement. So this Friday, we're focusing on freshwater conservation. Featured guest is Sandra Pistel. She'll be in a conversation with Amanda Cooper. And we're really excited because Sandra Pistel is an acclaimed water expert, author. She's the founder and director of the Global Water Policy Project, and she's been studying freshwater issues for over 30 years.
What are some of the specific topics to be discussed?
There's a little bit about what can we do as individuals to really achieve water conservation, but the conversation with Amanda Cooper is also going to really touch on a lot of the work that Sandra's been doing and how communities have been working together to really return nature's share of water to rivers, and particularly focused on the Colorado River Basin. And here in New Mexico, a lot of people don't realize it, but in Santa Fe and Albuquerque, people really rely on the Colorado River because of that San Juan Chama Diversion Project built several years ago. And it brings water, that Colorado River water, right into our faucets. And then in southwestern New Mexico, the Gila River is also part of the Colorado River Basin. And Audubon's been working on protecting the Gila River with a lot of other folks. And the Gila is under threat from a large-scale diversion and a pipeline across the Continental Divide to Deming or Las Cruces.
And Karen, tell us, what are some of the major successes we've seen here in New Mexico in freshwater conservation, say, over the past 5 years?
I think with drought and climate change, it's been interesting to see some of the flows and the lowest flows, actually, in some of New Mexico's rivers and across the West. And, of course, the water demands don't match a lot of the allocations or appropriations across the West. Some of the successes that we really see, you know, we're really proud that Governor Martinez has committed $1.5 million towards river restoration, and we hope that she really follows through with that in this upcoming legislative session. We've seen communities coming together and working on restoration projects, and Audubon's helped work with a lot of volunteers up and down the Rio Grande, for instance. On the Chama, there have been some studies and collaborative work to really come together to look at mimicking some of nature's floods and flows, and there's some really innovative work there. And I think generally I get a sense that most entities and agencies are really recognizing that the old ways of doing business aren't really working for us and that we've really got to come together in collaborative ways. So we're excited about some of the opportunities that are emerging. And particularly Senator Tom Udall has really called attention to some of the issues. There was recently a conference in Albuquerque that focused on transformational solutions for our water. And at that conference, he reiterated that the days of big-scale federal water projects is over and that we've really got to come up with new solutions.
And what would you say are some of the major challenges we are or will be facing?
Some of the biggest issues, especially because Albuquerque is right in the heart of our state and the largest population, we really see the middle Rio Grande, which is that stretch between Cochiti Reservoir and Elephant Root Reservoir, as one of the sort of areas that it's a major challenge and that we really want to make a difference. Audubon is working with several other organizations to really optimize the water management to benefit the whole ecosystem through the way that we operate the different reservoirs. There's the Heron Reservoir, Elvado, Abiquiú, Cochiti, and try to reduce some of the conflicts regarding some of the endangered species. We're also looking at ways to improve the amount of water that might be dedicated for environmental benefit. Some of that is really looking at the way that we store water, the way that we use floodwaters, and creating some of the legal frameworks to be able to essentially create a more resilient river system so that in the future, when there's even more extreme drought and flood events, particularly that's what's been predicted with climate change, that we can really have a healthier system that can absorb some of those extremes and that can still provide enough water for people and nature. And so, you know, it's no surprise that New Mexicans are really concerned about water issues in our state and that we do believe rivers are really critical to our quality of life.
Karen Stockdale of Audubon, New Mexico, many thanks for joining us. And a reminder, that conference we've been talking about is Friday at Santa Fe's Randall Davey Audubon Center from 10 a.m. through 1 p.m. More of At Noon coming up for you in just a moment.
KSFR Fund Drive, how much would you like to contribute? Hold on a minute. Please, could some of you out there come in the week of October 6th and help us answer phones during our fall fund drive? To reserve a time slot as a phone volunteer, call Cheryl Davis at 660-4656. That's 660-4656.
12:29 here at KSFR as At Noon continues. This morning, Senator Martin Heinrich took some time to talk to KSFR News about several important issues. He spoke first on some proposed new standards for carbon emissions.
Well, I think they're a good start in recognizing that we have a problem. We have a carbon pollution problem that is contributing to really erratic and unpredictable weather events, things that obviously impact us when we live in an arid environment like New Mexico, especially when we either get way too much rain or none for months or years at a time. And so this is a start for using science as a guide to say that carbon pollution should not be completely unlimited, that there should be reasonable limits on carbon pollution, and that we should work over time to remove the carbon pollution from our energy sector and our economy and become more and more efficient.
The senator is hopeful the measure will receive good support from both sides of the aisle.
I think it'll be one of those issues that is deeply divided. There were millions of people from around the country who supported these new rules, but at the same time, we're talking about very powerful industries and vested interests that will oppose these rules. But I think they're well crafted enough that they're going to stand up to the test of both whether or not the legislature, House and Senate, try to change them, as well as the litigation that is likely to happen from industry groups and some utilities. I think it'll stand the test of time, and then we'll tweak it over time.
Senator Heinrich also had this to say to New Mexicans who were concerned about a possible governmental shutdown.
I'm confident that we're not going to let that happen. Now, it is very disconcerting to me to see Senator Cruz and some of the Tea Party contingent use the debate over whether or not we should keep the government open as an opening to once again have yet another attempt to repeal Obamacare. But I think cooler heads will prevail among many in the Republican caucus. I think the Democratic caucus is united in saying that we have to pass a spending bill. It's part of our constitutional duties. It's part of our job. We're going to do that. And we're not going to let other issues, be they, you know, ideological issues on the left or right, keep us from doing our fundamental job, keeping the government open, making sure that our men and women in uniform or at DOD or people who teach our kids at Head Start can keep the lights on and the doors open. And so this delegation in New Mexico, Senator Udall and myself, we are fighting very hard in the Senate to make sure that a government shutdown is not a reality.
Senator Martin Heinrich speaking with KSFR News earlier today. For several years, Santa Fe has been home to a number of Tibetans. Now, a special Tibetan religious teacher is spending time here. Here is KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard with the story.
Geshe Sherab is a Tibetan monk currently residing in Santa Fe. Originally from Nepal, the monk has traveled all over the world. He said that tolerance of others who are different, for instance in religious beliefs, is improving around the world.
Well, I mean, definitely. I found as I travel more, outside we look different cultures, different facials, but basically when it comes to our emotions, I found we all are the same on a human level. Everyone wants to be happy, and everyone does not want to be experience any pain, suffering, and then of course we all have emotional similar problem, and that is what I found. I found everywhere exactly more or less similar things. And
regarding America's continued involvement, militarily and diplomatically, in other countries, particularly the Middle East, he said there is not universal support throughout the world by any means.
Again, as far as I know, it seems a lot of people does not like United States for getting too much involved with that kind of war and that kind of things. I think definitely they would like United States to get involved with trying to solve problem more peacefully without using any kind of war or so forth. So I think many places where I visit, I think that is more or less that is what I hear.
He does give high marks to Santa Feans for tolerance.
My impression at the moment is I think the people here are much more open-minded compared to many of the places. And I think people seem to be more tolerant with different spirituality or different culture and different people. So I think the people here seem much more tolerant and much more open-minded.
Geisha Sharab will be teaching in Santa Fe for the next several weeks, and classes are open to all. Those classes will be held at the Tibetan Norbu Ling Buddhist Center on 2nd Street. There is no charge. For more information, visit the center's website. For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
12:36 here in the newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour. Now is the perfect time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
There was a period of about a month when the hummingbirds were so plentiful where I lived that they were going through 6 cups of sugar water a day. I know that doesn't even begin to compare to some people who at the peak of the season might have 6 or 7 feeders going at one time. This year seemed a little bit different when it came to hummingbirds. For about half the summer, only 1 or 2 hummers visited my feeders. Then about the 3rd week of July, the number of winged visitors started to pick up. Then by the 2nd week of August, those little guys were filling the front yard with feathered kamikazes, not really caring how big or small the perceived opponent. Then after the 1st weekend in September, it was like someone turned off a hummingbird faucet. If history repeats, I'll have a few hummers hang around well into the fall. 1 year, a hummingbird stayed here close to Thanksgiving, but then it left, probably hearing that for the holiday, we eat bird. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Charles Maynard and Tom Trowbridge. We'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow, and as always, we hope you join us.